for me would also be very important to have no hierarchical divide between lecturer and student. Because we all can think of a lecturer who feels he has the moral, the social, and the intellectual high ground. And that is always something that discourages learning, I feel, because it has nothing to do with any shared construction or my own construction of knowledge and learning.
Welcome to the Unconditional Teaching Podcast. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Katharina Pietsch, Tilsi Bura, and myself, Jessica Koch. In this two-part episode, Katharina Till and I talk to Sophie Giegel and Benjamin Stur, two students at Bielefeld University, about how they experienced a socially distanced learning environment and online teaching during the global pandemic. So I have a bazillion questions noted down, but I think the most pressing right now, because you've both talked a lot about what weighs you down at the moment and what poses additional challenges for you organizing yourselves, certain didactic methods, certain approaches that don't work. Is there anything that you think lecturers or teachers in general can do right now to assist students of any age and any knowledge level, really, to have the most socially rewarding teaching and learning experience right now? Is there anything in your experience that was maybe best practice examples, something that you've seen teachers or other students do in class that really helped you to get at least a bit more comfortable with the situation and feel like, okay, I'm taking something academically worthwhile with me from this class? So is there anything that comes to your mind?
I mean, what you guys are doing is acknowledging the students, just like saying, we're all in the same boat, and sharing your own experiences with struggling with the situation. I feel that that's best way to help the students deal with that thing, because then they realize we are all just human beings and the situation is shit for all of us.
I entirely agree. I think communication and acknowledgement is something that is missing sometimes in lecturers and teachers. And I feel like some kind of collective reflection in the course, well, lectures are hard, but they are usually asynchronous anyway, but in seminars, that you, at some point, in the beginning ideally, mention and transparently talk about, that you try to figure out what your students need and what you need and where we can meet this. So I feel like offering alternatives is something I found very rewarding, I guess, that I knew that I didn't need to do the max stuff, but that there were alternatives, that I didn't need to attend maybe every video conference, and that I could hand in something that I did on my own. Or on the other hand, that there was some kind of modulary teaching. In the didactics department, there was something that was done that we had like every 2 or 3 weeks, a video conference. And in between, there was one obligatory module we were to work with, basically. And then there was stuff we could do additionally. That was definitely manageable in the time. But whenever I felt I was overwhelmed with all the other stuff that was going on, or I've already encountered the topic, that I didn't feel pressured to do that additional work just so I was able to not sit there and say nothing. So I enjoyed this kind of mix between those things. And something I enjoyed, as weird as it sounds, I'm actually someone that enjoys freedom a lot in seminars, and I don't really like doing step-by-step stuff very strictly. I enjoyed structure a lot in the seminars when there wasn't a lot of, okay, now talk. Because in this kind of video conference setting, when some have their screen on, some don't, nobody wants to turn their microphone on because there are background noises, me turning papers or, you know, tipping on my keyboard. So when the lecturer offered some kind of structure, was it or is it breakout sessions with at the most 5 people to pre-discuss stuff in some kind of a safe space in this Schonraum in which you can discuss it and then carry it back into one of the group is usually comfortable with talking in front of this great or bigger video conference. This is something I actually found rewarding, and yeah, it kind of gave me some sense of security and certainty that I knew what was going to happen and that I knew when I raised my hand, not in the screen, but on this little button, that I was going to be able to say something, and I didn't need to talk over someone to get my turn to talk.
Hmm. I think one thing that is definitely like packed in what you've just said, or somewhat hidden or implicit in what you just said, is the fact that for me, what I take away from that as a teacher is that I need to award students more time in class. The stuff that works in 10 minutes in a normal classroom setting does not work in 10 minutes in a Zoom session.
Yeah.
For technical difficulties, for the very fact that we are talking screen to screen, for the fact that the communicative situation is different because you usually don't have a warm-up like this, what Till described, this sitting together talking, hey, how are you doing? Nice to see you again. Did you do the homework? These kinds of things. There was no warm-up, no social warm-up to the situation. Right now it's, hi, we're on. And if students are lucky, then they have a lecturer there who asks, how are you guys doing? Do you have coffee? Are you good right now? And sort of tries to provide additional warm-up if students are willing to engage in that. So I think the as teachers, we must not fall into the trap of thinking that knowledge production and this old-fashioned idea of knowledge transmission works in this setting the way it used to work in the classroom. That's just not true. It's not the same thing just online. It's just different. Are there any things that you've learned about yourself in the past, like last semester and this semester, about the way you learn and what you need in terms of a good learning experience? Anything that you didn't know about yourself maybe beforehand, or something that you knew but that has sort of fossilized itself right now for you?
Well, yes. I think I've written Till an email in which I said I had a small revelation about myself quite on the end of the summer term, actually. In which I said I learned about myself that I'm a social learner, which is probably something that is not really surprising if someone knows me. But in this moment, I've thought about why my plan I've had for every week didn't work out. And I was really wondering, because I've already mentioned I'm an organized person and mostly actually quite disciplined when it comes to doing stuff for university, at least when it comes to seminars and stuff. And I was wondering throughout the whole term why my week plans didn't work out. And I've then noticed that I've already mentioned that as well, that video conferences are draining me. And that was not because there's a screen in front of me, but because I wasn't able to communicate about the knowledge that I've acquired in this kind of free way that is usually provided in seminars. This kind of moment in which at the end of a seminar we talk about the theory that we've encountered, or about the like I said, novel we've read together and then made sense of. And this is something that kind of fossilized itself, that this isn't taking a lot of energy from me, sitting in a seminar room and talking and thinking. And we all know that thinking is so exhausting sometimes. But in this kind of seminar setting, it wasn't as exhausting as I felt this physically during this video conference time, in which I was suddenly not able to do that. And no video conference can replace this, being in person and having this context. And this is something I've found out, and that actually frustrates me a bit with a view into the future, because at least one term is or the next term is going to be digital as well, and it's the last few of my terms at university. And it sucks to know that this most of these terms will be digitally as well, and I won't have the experience that I enjoy about university so much.
I can only agree with that. I mean, I would also go a little further and say that I realize that I'm more of a social person in general, which I only realized like a couple of months after this crisis thing began, because I suddenly missed being around people. And I was like, that's not the usual. And I realized again and again how much I hate group work. It's everything with more than two people and me is, in my opinion, too much, because I have a very particular way of working and thinking and discussing, and it's very hard for me to do it in a different way.
Can you elaborate on that a little?
Also how that relates especially to digital learning.
Yes. So, I mean, discussing things is great. I like that. But when we have to do a group task, I like to be able to rely on people. So I like to choose who I work with, because I know with certain people I do really good work with. And also other people have to rely on me, and I'm sometimes not the most reliable person in finishing things on time, so I don't want anybody else to be negatively influenced by that. So that's mostly it, my problem with group work, that I can't choose who I want to work with.
Because like breakout rooms are always just like randomly assigned?
Often.
People don't have the newest version of Zoom, that is the case, yes.
And you need to make the effort as a lecturer to sort of slot people in particular groups, so.
Yes.
I want to elaborate on that and kind of agree, because I've had a lot of group tasks in the summer term as well, and most of the groups were put together arbitrarily, either by Zoom or by, you know, choose one topic and see who comes out as a group, which I really don't like. And I differentiate between group tasks and group discussions in digital teaching, because a group task in which you work together over a longer time, and then if you are then put together arbitrarily, is a tremendous exhaustive task, because then you have to have the whole group finding phase, which is a lot even in person, and then you also need to do the other stuff that we've talked about, finding your new routines, etc., etc. But I think group discussions are something I've enjoyed even with arbitrary groups. When you've got like 10 minutes, here's something discussed. That is something I've really enjoyed, because I already mentioned that this whole being in a great seminar room with 40 people, 20 have their cameras on and one has their microphone on and is, you know, doing background noise, is really exhausting. But the smaller groups for discussions, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think I would like to use this point, because what the two of you have just said, I think for me, sort of boils down to three keywords for me that I've observed in my own teaching. It seems to me that we need to find, as with any regular teaching, but also especially now in the digital teaching environment, a balance between challenge and choice and comfort. So there seems to be the necessity to figure out, okay, how can I help my students to find ways with me together that help them to work in a way that they want to and in a way that benefits them. And only my students can know that. I don't know how individual students work best. I can only figure this out with them together in sort of communicating with them. So I have to give them choices in that regard. But I also want my classes to pose certain challenges for people. I want to pose the in Krashen's term, the I plus one moment, as it were. And I need to be able to provide sort of a bouquet of challenges for people that my students then can pick from. I want to have my next level up in writing good paragraphs. So this is my next challenge. Or I want to understand this really, really difficult theory because I think I want to apply this in the future, maybe in my BA or MA thesis to something. So this is what I'm going for. Or for some students, it may be navigating the social environment of discussion, particularly for people who are extremely anxious in social settings. For them, it may not be about the content of the class at all, but about the social experience. So here's a challenge for you if you want it. And the last point is, of course, comfort. And I can already hear sort of teachers from my past rolling their eyes at me for even mentioning this now. But I think I've said this before, and I would always reiterate this. It's nobody ever learned more or better because they were terrified in class. But people learn best when, I think, when they feel secure. When they're being posed with a challenge that doesn't threaten their very existence or their mental well-being. Yes, of course, challenges can motivate us, but it shouldn't be about, can I leave this classroom without being traumatized or without being like suffering a panic attack or something like that? And for a lot of our students, this is not something that is outside of the realm of the possible. So providing a balance, or figuring out together with students how to provide a balance between challenge and choice and comfort, I think is even more challenging right now in this online semester than it is already in regular teaching with larger groups. And just one last footnote concerning the cameras, because I just this last week I had a fantastic example of how this social contract between students suddenly doesn't function in the same way that it used to. And there was one student in one of my classes who by accident left her microphone on while I was telling them about that I would slot them into breakout rooms with a discussion task. And in the background, I heard another person say to her, look, you need to switch your camera on. And then she said to this other person, no, we're just going into breakout rooms. And I thought this is so emblematic for what this kind of socially distanced learning situation can do with people. This feeling, no, I don't need to show myself. I don't need to open up this communicative situation because who cares anyway? And I don't want to. I get the chance to distance myself from the whole thing, so I will. I will leave the camera off and I will switch the microphone off and I won't participate in this discussion. And this must be, I mean, for me, this is super stressful when I have a class and only like 10 of 50 cameras are on. Counting everybody who doesn't have a camera, who can't use a camera for other reasons. But in group discussions, this must be so frustrating for those students who are really trying to make an effort, who upload a picture or use their camera and then participate in discussions because they are seeking out this social situation and this thing that usually in a classroom situation cannot be avoided, at least not this, yes, I'm present.
It's actually something I've noticed when switching from university to school and now in the distance teaching at school is that even less students or pupils at school have their camera on. Actually, nobody does. So it was a big surprise for me, or a shock moment actually, when I sat in my own first class digitally, which I then held, and nobody turned their camera on. And some of them said, well, I don't have a camera, which is perfectly fine. And of course, it's also perfectly fine to not turn your camera on. But on the one hand, I felt like privileged that in university, I didn't have to think about it that much after all, because someone had always had their camera on in my seminars. And on the other hand, I was terrified why students at school don't turn their camera on. And on the one hand, I think that is because of the hardware. Many of them, I've learned since then, are in the chats with their smartphone. So I think this is kind of a awkward thing to have your phone and being wobbly all the time. But on the other hand, I don't think they feel comfortable enough in school to share their personal space.
Mm, yeah.
Which was something actually a lecturer at university said, and that kind of blew my mind and has kept me thinking since.
I'm not surprised at all that people feel uncomfortable with sharing their private spaces, and or to figure out a way in which they can share as part of their private space that they're comfortable with sharing, like the most blank white wall in the background or something along those lines. And then, of course, we are also talking about the digital divide here, like who has the hardware to do certain things, who has a green screen and can just like pretend they're somewhere in space, who has a second screen or can afford a second screen to look at a shared screen from the lecturer and look at the faces of the fellow students, who has a good microphone, who has access to a good internet connection. All of these things play a role in whether or not we feel comfortable sharing our faces or can share our faces. Are we living with anybody else who is in the background, who does not want to be seen on screen? So taking on this persona of the student or taking on the persona of the lecturer is so much harder when we are basically streaming from our personal spaces.
One thing that I'm also missing is the fact that I can't read the room. So that's another thing I've learned about myself. I'm a big fan of no holds barred discussion. Like, I don't care if anybody rips my argument apart. I don't take it personally. I find that very engaging, because that's how discussions, in my opinion, are perfect. That's just me, though. So sometimes I might say something that a person takes personally, and I can't read that from the person if they don't have their camera on, or if they have their camera on and aren't really moving. So I can see if a person tenses or something, so if I maybe have gone too far or something.
Yeah.
As a teacher, I think this is even worse, because whenever I want to say something and would like to know how the room reacts to that, especially in classes or courses where I'm not really comfortable, and you know, as from the practical Praxis semester, practical term speaking, I don't know the classes and courses very well. And then I need to teach them digitally. And I'm like, well, I have no idea whether any one of you is there listening, understanding me.
Bored.
It's bored. Am I connecting with anything I've just said to you? It's frustrating. And even worse, I think, than in a normal discussion where you can at least say, okay, it's silence, obviously that didn't work. And in class, you don't know why the other one is silent.
Yeah.
Or the 20, nodding. 30 other ones. Yeah, not even nodding. And this is, oh boy, that was really frustrating in every lesson. And I've tried to work with those, you know, hands up, thumb up things with the reactions that you can show. And it kind of helps to see, oh, well, everybody is raising their hand when I ask for it, so they are at least there. But it doesn't nearly replace this, because you feel so detached from everyone in this moment.
to me, it sounds more and more as if the disconnect between people that schools and university have at a very fundamental level installed because they are so hierarchical, that this is aggravated by the situation, by the technology and by the, I mean, that's so ironic. In the beginning, when social distancing became this huge buzzword, people still tried, some politicians, for instance, they still try to remind us, no, it's not about social distance, it's about physical distance. But the term stuck, and that's for a reason, I think. So it's actually about social distances and social disconnects. And I think that maybe classes that are still working relatively well are working well or working okay because the disconnect is not that much aggravated by the situation, because lecturers and students as well are still taking care to keep up basic connections. And I think they are able to do that because they are still able to see themselves more on eye level and hierarchies, and this idea of hierarchical bestowing of knowledge is not that important in the classes that these teachers teach and that students attend and engage in. And I also thought, like, for me, this all these black screens we are talking about, and it does make sense that that there are even more of them in a school setting than a university setting. They are maybe like a representation or an effect of this disconnect. Because, and it makes total sense, and I love what you said, Sophie, that this people are not comfortable to share their personal space. Why would they, if in this, in our building system, they are not seen as people, as persons? So why would they want to share their personal space? Why would they risk sharing that? Why would they risk connecting in this much more precarious situation where, like, the rules and the social contract is much less established and defined, like in this video conferences and digital learning situations? Why would they risk exposing themselves if the rules of this inhumane hierarchical system of education, and this is worse in school, I think, than in university, yeah, but still are in place. So I think this, and I'm only realizing why we are talking and why you are talking about your experiences. And I thought about, I have never blacked out my screen in any Zoom session that I've been in, but I haven't been a student during the pandemic at all. But I also think I don't feel the need to hide or protect is the better word, I think, to protect my personal space in video course. And I think this is in part because I was lucky enough to attend a school, the Oberstufenkolleg in Bielefeld, where much more personal and non-hierarchical relationships between teachers and students are possible. So I've had the opportunity once in my life to be in a learning environment where I was seen and treated as a person. And I think from this experience, I still have the belief that, and it doesn't really matter whether I'm in a student or in a teacher position in a specific instance or situation, I still have this belief or this trust that I can be or show myself as a person, not just as someone who inhabits a certain position in a hierarchy. And this is one of the reasons, I think, why I'm mostly comfortable with just sharing my personal space on screen and trying to connect in the way that technology in this instance allows. But I totally see that people who did not have this amazing opportunity of seeing that learning can be something different, that it can be based on personal relationships between people, and some of them are called teachers and some of them are called students, but this is not the most important thing, that this is just not the case for them. This is just not how they are able to see and define themselves.
I think I have an anecdote to share, or even a method maybe, that made it possible in some situations in my seminars to overcome this hurdle of showing yourself, or at least to create a kind of community through the screens by sharing personal life. And this was begun or started off or inspired by a student in my blog seminar in summer, who obviously didn't have any trouble sharing her personal space, proven by the fact that she always looked like she had just woken up, turned on the computer in bed, and she sat there with her pajamas, basically. And she had two canaries in her apartment who flew around her and sort of sat on her shoulders. And so at some point I didn't notice, I was talking, and in the chat it went like, ah, and oh, how, what's their names? And I was like, what's going on? And then I saw, and this turned into a everyone show their pets session in class, which was so lovely and really, really nice. And people deliberately or specifically switched their cameras on to show off their dogs or their cats or their pets. I know, Jessica, your cats don't care whether you want them to be on screen or not. They always make themselves stars of your seminars. But I don't have any pets, but I found it lovely to see, and I tried to recreate this moment in the next seminar that I had, when I asked, okay, if you have pets, please show them, bring them on screen. And this creates sort of a bridge to, hey, we are people who live in our personal spaces, and we have cohabitants, basically, and we can have a nice moment with that situation for a little bit. I try to keep track of that and remember that as a moment that is recreatable by us teachers, because in a seminar of 100 people or 40 people, there's bound to be people with pets who like to show them off, basically. And this creates a moment of community in the social spaces that we live in.
Yeah, I entirely agree, because this is as a sharing something small about your personal space is always something I found interesting, and it was always a moment of personal acknowledgement.
Yeah, use those moments. I think this, we were talking about best practice before, and this is one thing that I try to file away for myself. Use those moments to create community and overcome the hierarchy and work with the social awkwardness that we're bound to experience.
Yeah.
I wanted to say something, because again, I'm trying to sort of synthesize what I hear when you were speaking, and I think what you just said about sharing personal space and how this can sort of create a more like sociable community in online classroom settings has a lot to do with changing the way we look at professionalism, or what we deem professional, because we have all of these YouTube clips of news anchors that suddenly showed that they were not wearing suit pants from the waist down, but their PJs, or where a cat just comes into the picture or something like that. And I think in a lot of settings, we pretend, or professionalism means pretending that you are not a private person. And I think this is always a damaging kind of concept. We can pretend that this is a way to protect ourselves from something, but what do we need to protect ourselves when we are sort of working together to create a cool communicative community? That there shouldn't be a need to, like, hierarchically speaking, to protect ourselves. But as Katharina pointed out, there are administrative hierarchical structures in place that make it so much harder to overcome this artificial construct of professionalism, and that leads to all kinds of pretending and also fearing to break the role that we are playing. And I feel that every day myself, and I can see it in the faces of my students when we have these moments where where I use a swear word, and I swear a lot in class because I can't stop myself even after years of practice. Or when students of mine, when there is a student who suddenly shuts their camera off and then sends me a private message and says, "Hi, I just need to breastfeed my newborn. Also, I'm so sorry that I had to leave the room right now." Well, yeah, of course. So something that would in any other setting be considered as some sort of a breach of professionalism, I think right now it gives us this digital learning environment can give us the opportunity to do away with this old idea of professionalism and rather see people in the private spaces where there are private people and also students, teachers in a student-teacher relationship.
I feel like this is something that is the essence of what we're talking about, that relationship and communication is something we need to focus on as students and as lecturers, teachers, to be everything that basically has to do with the education in this sense, that we need to an open communication on the one hand, and on the other hand, not only a working relationship in a sense of work, but a working as in healthy relationship with our lecturers on the one hand and students on the other. Because I feel this is what all our contributions revolved around, or a lot of them at least. And something that as a teacher to be is something I give a lot of thought to. Because how do I present myself to students so that they kind of take me seriously as someone who is small and doesn't take much physical room in a room? This is something I've thought about a lot. And I've noticed that, of course, it is important to kind of be consequential and, you know, stay true to when I say I do something. But on the other hand, I feel like as a student myself and also as a teacher, it's important to share some personal stuff. And this is on what we build relationships. If it's shared hobbies or, I don't know, me admitting that behind me, this isn't books, but video games. It isn't professional at all because, you know, this is something I hear, "Oh, your background's so professional." I'm like, no, this is all role-playing stuff and this is all video games. And it's sharing this is something that is so important in this moment to say, no, this isn't professional at all. And of course, I am a professional as your teacher, but I'm also a person who looks at Stiftung Warentest and thinks this is awesome and feels like a Spießer because of that. But this is also, and this is something I've connected with my students. And those courses or classes in which I shared something like that, this is where I feel a connection and a relationship that isn't only I am the kind of praxis semester student that is kind of here, but I'm there as a person and as a professional. And this is very, very meaningful in this moment for me and I think for the students as well.
I actually have a question. It's one of the last questions that I personally have on my list that I was like dying to ask you. What strategies have you developed over the in the last semester and this semester in this digital environment to make this maybe not just bearable for you, but also like turn this into something that can be considered successful in your own book? Like, are there any hands-on things that you can share with our audiences and with the three of us that have helped you that are new in your repertoire, as it were?
Well, for me, it's going outside, actually, and I'm quite the couch potato, to be honest. Like, really, really, I've spent a lot of time at home and I'm really comfortable in my home. But leaving my desk and my flat behind to be outside, that could be 10 to 20 minutes on the balcony or 10 to 20 minutes going through the neighborhood, is something I find relieving, and it has helped me so much to clear my head after a video conference when I'm feeling exhausted and drained and kind of discontent with the experience, often, not always, of course, and it helps me so much to just be outside and usually I also listen to music, actually. So I'm not really sure whether it's being outside and or listening to music, but that is something I could share, and not only in the afternoon, but when you have like a 30-minute break between sessions, just however you can, shortly being outside was something that helped me immensely.
I could envision that this has also something to do with the switch of scenery, because usually you would go from one classroom to the other.
Yeah.
Basically physically signaling that you're going from one communicative situation into another communicative situation.
Yeah.
Which I would imagine sort of readies our brains for like does a sweep, essentially. And while we may still think about what has happened in the other class, we become aware of the social situation changing.
I fully agree to that. It's something I'm missing a lot, to just walk between classes, even just for a short moment to be alone and think, well, okay, what's next, right? And something that has worked as well for me is some kind of reality escape, whether it be role-playing in Dungeons & Dragons or playing video games. Just encountering good stories is something that has helped me a lot. Reading good books, just compelling stories.
I can only agree with that. I mean, especially the pen and paper thing helps a lot, because I'm lucky in that part, because I'm living with the people who I'm playing with. So the boyfriend of one of my flatmates also is here quite regularly as the one person that we are allowed to meet at the moment. And so I'm lucky to have three other people who I'm playing with on a sort of regular basis in person.
That's great.
Yes, indeed.
I'm just now realizing, I realized 5 minutes ago that we are like five pen and paper role-playing enthusiasts sitting here in this podcast. It's quite amazing. Like all gamers, all pen and paper enthusiasts. It's like fate.
Indeed.
I think it's really amazing how often we have come back during this conversation to like the physical or material conditions of learning, and also the social conditions and how important they are. Like this just changing classrooms and how important this is to get you in a different mindset for the next class and the next topic. And the class is always also a social situation. So how important actually physical and material conditions of learning are, and how different they are, and that no one that I know of at least really acknowledges this at the moment and takes it into account, I think is appalling, but it is also very interesting to talk about this. And I would like to come back to one thing that Sophie said in the beginning that I found really amazing, and I would like to have this be my last question for today. You said that what you are missing in most of the digital formats is this shared construction of knowledge, that it's much harder to get this. And I think this is what learning is all about, actually. Learning has to do with the physical material conditions. It has to do with the social conditions. It has to do with community and identity and embodiment. And it has to do with shared construction of knowledge so much. So I would be interested in asking, especially Benny and Sophie, but also maybe the three of us, how would that shared construction of knowledge at uni look in an ideal world for you? What facilitates for you personally this kind of learning the most? I would like to hear about that from you, if you like.
Well, I'm a very analog person, I like the old school part of university, like this meeting in a room with other people, having sort of the same goal of becoming a little more educated, including the lecturer, of course. I mean, that's usually the source of most knowledge in that classroom, who's sharing that knowledge with everyone else so that everybody else can maybe connect that knowledge to other knowledge that they have. And so the general knowledge of the world growing, that's my personal ideal learning space.
I would elaborate on that, because I agree that I think meeting is something as, like, ideally in person for me, would be to having people that have a shared interest in gaining something new. That can be a theory, that can be, I don't know, zombie movies, anything that is a shared interest and that can have something to do with university. And if we need to have subjects, ideally a subject, but ideally, I think it would be to have a shared interest, a shared discussion about that, in which everyone can include and contribute with their own previous knowledge. And so I think I agree that a lecturer is something really beneficial, someone who has a bit more experience, maybe that can kind of lay a foundation for that. But everything else comes together, like previous knowledge, previous experience that is connected in a discussion. And I think that is, for me, an ideal learning situation. And the role of a lecturer in that would be to kind of take the essence of this and try to make it a bit more accessible by means of visualization or something. And and maybe to connect this a bit.
Maybe I would like to add to that, because I feel that I would combine Benjamin's and Sophie's visions and sort of add from the teacher perspective to that, that I would, in an ideal environment, my students would feel free enough to tell me without reservation about what they need, and feel that it is okay to do that, to let me know, hey, we need you today to talk a lot. I mean, in spite of me being very much in love with talking, I think the best session from my perspective is always a session where I talk the least and my students talk the most. But I'm also aware from my own student experiences that it can be so cool to listen to lecturers talk for 90 minutes when you have a cool lecturer. So I would like my students to feel, or in an ideal world, in an ideal teaching situation, my students would feel always the freedom to say what they need, even if that means to bust my plan sometimes for a session. And I also would like to say that I think an ideal learning environment and teaching environment that benefits everybody, in any normal circumstances, but especially in digital learning, has to do with more time. I find that this may be the most precious commodity that we have at the moment. How much time can we spend on what? And I oftentimes feel that at university we have a bit more freedom, but in school in particular, with the curriculums that are very, very strict in a sense, and very, like, at this stage, a student has to have understood this, because in the next unit, we are going to do this, and then there's going to be a test about this, and if they fail, and then we are in this spiral of more, more, more cramped into very little time. And it simply doesn't account for the realities of learning and for the things that can go wrong and do go wrong. So I think these are the two things: to help each other find freedom in these learning experiences and teaching experiences on both sides, as it were, and an increased awareness of the importance of time in practices of learning and teaching.
But it also means, and this is where we started out, I think, that especially in asynchronous settings where your acquired knowledge, the things you've read, the things that you've, the video lectures that you've watched, that you can't go anywhere with that. You can't reconnect to your lecturer or to your fellow students is the worst of all worlds, right? Because then it's just, it's dead knowledge. It's not something that you make alive or keep alive by having it count for something or acquire meaning in a social situation where you share it with someone else and where you like get your opportunity to communicate about it with either the experts, the lecturers, or with others in a community situation that says this is a place of learning where we have a common goal of learning and acquiring knowledge and share knowledge, right?
Something I would like to add, because I've talked here a bit about the role of a lecturer. I think for me it would also be very important to have no hierarchical divide between lecturer and student, because we all can think of a lecturer who feels he has the moral, the social, and the intellectual high ground. And that is always something that discourages learning, I feel, because it has nothing to do with any shared construction or my own construction of knowledge and learning.
Yeah. I mean, when Katharina, when you spoke, Benny was nodding, Sophie was nodding, I was nodding. I think, yes, I would agree. To me, asynchronous teaching is not worth doing as a teacher. I do believe that this can be done well and this can be profitable, but for me too, this is not part of the ideal world of teaching and learning. And I wouldn't do it as a teacher. I wouldn't do it because to me, what's the point of learning is this shared pursuit of insight, running with an idea, watching other people run with ideas, and sharing expertise and reflection and communication about the idea, inspiring each other. And I find this is possible in synchronous online teaching. But when Jessica talked about time, I was thinking about my own seminars, and I'm teaching bi-weekly 4-hour slots. And I feel like in 4 hours or in a 4-hour slot, I get half as much done in terms of communication, but also in terms of content, in terms of exchange, in terms of how much students can exchange among each other. It's twice as exhausting as a usual 2-hour block. And the focus for me has changed massively from sort of easy shared pursuit of insight, mutual construction of knowledge, as Sophie said it, to just holding on, just creating moments of relationship between students and between me and students. And a lot of my teaching effort flows into creating relationship. And then a lot of the stuff that I would build on in normal class situations under non-pandemic conditions in a seminar room falls under the table because I don't really have the time, or the interaction is so awkward that it doesn't really work that way. And yeah, so my ideal kind of teaching is also, like Benny said, an old school analog classroom. Yeah. I mean, in normal life seminars, we're all doing an element of asynchronous teaching, usually because we give homework tasks or assignments to prep assignments for the next session and so on. And this is no different. Now, at least in my classes, I still do that, and I spend a lot of time creating these assignment sheets, and it's also a way of communicating to me. I can use instructions or a certain kind of language to tell students about my thoughts on a subject, which they can then position themselves to in the exercise and something like that. And this is, to me, this is not an extraordinary part of teaching. But then if I imagine I would replace the live class session by another one of those modules, then this would become disconnected for me. Mm. And I wouldn't, I mean, I can put in all the work I want and all the effort I want. If I don't have a person responding to that, to me, to my face, basically, then as a teacher, I feel this doesn't have much meaning to what I do. And I've accepted that about my teaching personality a long time ago. I need that personal connection. I need people sort of nodding and saying, oh, yeah, this reminds me of, or, oh, I see, or can you explain this again? And I don't doubt that you can put a lot of effort in good online lectures, for example, and then do a flipped classroom. But you can do all that in live sessions better than you can do it fully digital, probably, I would assume.
Sometimes I have generally problems to concentrate on someone talking or on a discussion, because then sometimes I have this one thought that I find very interesting, and then I'm like off for 20 minutes. And usually in when we are sitting in class, I usually don't have a problem with re-entering the discussion or like connecting to that again and understanding what people are talking about. But I need that thinking time for myself. That I find really hard in the digital age is in this digital format too, because I find it, even if I'm able to concentrate on that, I find it hard to concentrate on whatever everyone's talking about. And I mean, those moments of where I suddenly understand something and the teacher or the lecturer sees that in the fact, I mean, I remember a certain moment in the Feminism 101 class where it made click and I finally understand what Judith Butler meant with anything she wrote. And I was like, this is that's the moment when I finally understood how my feminist personal view works. And that being acknowledged by like you saying, oh, I see something is working in your head right now. Mm. And verbalize
that. I remember that. Yeah,
exactly. And that made me verbalize that helped a lot. And I mean, it's very hard for you guys to see that, because there are 40 tiles, sometimes not even with a camera on, and even then it's sometimes very hard to read a face through a camera.
I think we should wrap up, and I would like you guys essentially to have the last word. And anything that you take away from this situation is going to be over at one point, we hope, at least, fingers crossed. Is there anything that you take away from this situation right now that you think is going to help you going forward, or that is going to or that has changed your mind about certain things in any regard that you want to take with you from this digital teaching experience or this digital learning experience?
I think for me, what I will take away for my academic career or for anything I want to achieve in the future would actually be to not always have that high expectations on myself, or on the other, or more like that that it's okay to not meet them all the time. Because this whole situation with my plans not working out, my weekly organized plans that I try to cling to usually to make sense of a lot of things, of course, haven't lost their meaning to me. But they don't need to be followed that strictly sometimes, I think. And to embrace these days where my body or head tells me to take days off, to embrace them and actually say, well, okay, body, if you say so, then I guess we will hang out on the couch today and play video games.
Good for you.
This is
good
awesome.
For you. This is awesome.
So for me, it's quite the opposite, as I'm more of a chaotic person. I like doing things when I feel like it, and however I feel like it. I do take liberties with finishing certain tasks, just because I'm like, no, I don't like being constricted by what anybody else thinks I should do. And I'm usually not a fan of routines. So, but in times like these, where everything's chaos anyways, routine might not be that bad. So, just for unusual times, I might take for myself that I should sort of establish a routine that I can go back to if shit hits the fan. And if not, I can just go on my old chaotic, sort of dysfunctional way.
Seriously, guys, if people, like those people out there who are listening to this and don't know us and the way we do podcasts, they will think this is scripted. This was absolutely fantastic.
Thank you so much.
This was an absolute delight talking with you about your experiences. And I think I speak for all of us when I say that I wish you, or we wish you, all the best going forward in the next few months. And that you hopefully get through this pandemic safe and sound and healthy.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having us. It was really a pleasure to be here. And so intellectually stimulating, if you want to say so. No, it was a great discussion, and I think I have so much to think about now. So thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, yeah.
Thanks for listening. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Katharina Pietsch, Tilsi Bura, and myself, Jessica Koch. Music by Lily Olason. If you want to know more about our project, head over to unconditional-teaching.com. Do you like our content and would like to engage with us? Check out our comment sections or contact us via team@unconditional-teaching.com.